Tampa.
Good evening, everybody.
Hello.
Good evening.
How are we all doing tonight? We all in great shape for a good learning experience tonight?
Yes.
Absolutely.
This is going to be an interesting discussion tonight, believe me, because this is where the rubber meets the road. Let's get attendance. Kevin. Francis. Rochelle, Selena, why the right list?
You're doing great tonight.
Yeah, Michelle. Michelle Kadushin. David.
Here, Dave.
One. Phyllis.
Here.
Gary.
Here, Dave.
Gita.
Yes, dear. Thank you.
And Ronaldo. James. Deborah Galley. Tanya. Lynette.
Here.
There she is. Deb Gilchrist.
Here.
Ron.
Yep.
Robin.
Hello?
Yes, who's
here.
This? Is Robin here?
Yes, here.
Okay.
Hi, Dave. This is Fran Monaco.
Hi, Fran. How are you doing?
Okay, great.
Tammy.
Here.
Rudy. Heather. Jay.
Here.
All right, so I'm missing Kevin, Rochelle, Selena. Hi, who just joined us?
I'm Selena.
Hi, Selena.
Hi.
Michelle Kadushin. Ronaldo, James, Deborah Galley, Tanya Darnell, Ron Morris.
Ron here.
Oh, Ron's here?
Yeah, yeah.
There we go. And Lonnie.
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, Lonnie's here? Okay, good. All right, so we have a very fascinating discussion tonight. I'll tell you guys that, you know, the disk concept you've learned, fairly simple concept to understand. But I'll tell you that over the years, I've had a lot of phone calls and made a lot of money from companies who called me and said, someone came in last year and did a disk workshop for us because I really believe in this tool. But now we're more screwed up than ever. Come and help me. And tonight's discussion, tonight and next Monday, are the reasons why people get disk wrong. So we'll go through those things tonight. We'll show you guys how to use disk the right way, things to look for, because disk is much, much more than just D, I, S, and C.
completely right. agree.
Pardon me?
I'm not saying, oh, sorry, I realized I wasn't on mute.
Okay. All right. A quick review of session 3. Talked about the high S. They're on that reserved side. There are people oriented, so it's a lower right-hand quadrant. People, they just want to get along. They tend to be natural followers and team players. They also tend to hide their emotions. They can't always tell what they're thinking. And they can be overly passive and non-action oriented. So that's some of the challenges you have with that high S style. Talk a little bit about how to coach the high S, you know, how to make them more aware of their tendencies, how to get them more on track. Talk about some key questions that they ask the high S behavioral style to make sure that they can receive benefit from the coaching. And the value of doing that. And some of those key questions we talked about were things, where my notes go, there we go. How does this make you feel? What's the opportunity? When can you do this? Time to nail them down into something more substantial than, gee, this is a great idea. Maybe I'll do it someday.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Because the high S is not inclined to take action. That's not their natural state of being. All right. We also talked about the high C. Again, they're that lower left-hand quadrant. So they are, again, thoughtful and reserved. But they're also more task-oriented than the S is. They're accurate, analytical, they're concise, they want to be accurate in all things they're doing, a very high attention to detail, so they make great accountants, great lawyers, great doctors for that matter in terms of attention to detail. They have a natural fear of being wrong and often will not admit when they're wrong. They tend to overuse detail and precision as a way to protect themselves and make sure they're always right. Talked about coaching the high S and some questions to ask them, like help make decisions. What else do you need to make this decision? When can you do this by? Nail them down to a time frame. And what are the pros and cons? Some key questions on the high C. So, any questions on the S or C before we get into a quick quiz? All right. So, which statement came from the high S?
Well, the answer's on here. Can I help you with those bags?
You got the answer on there?
Yeah.
Did I just send out the wrong sheet this time?
Well, that's the only one that you had. You left the answer on there.
I'll have to fix that. I'll tell you there. I'll fix that for next time.
At least you know we're right.
I'll fix that. Okay, so that was an easy one then. How about the animals most like the high S?
An ostrich?
Yeah, the ostrich.
And why would you choose an ostrich?
Stick their head in the sand.
Yeah, stick their head in the sand. Try and hide from the reality. Don't tell what really is true. Just let them just pull along the way I am. All right, then. So, which statement came from the high C?
Well, I'm sorry, what was the answer to that one, the high S?
The high S is the ostrich.
Oh, right. Okay.
What's the name of the high
practice
C?
Perfect.
Practice makes perfect, yep.
Perfect.
Back to space. That was an easy one. Wasn't that easy? Yeah, okay. Which animal is most like the high sea?
I think it's a swallow from Capistrano.
And why would you choose a swallow from Capistrano?
Because he's seeking safety.
They're seeking safety. That's one reason, sure.
I'm sorry. I apologize. This is Robin. I apologize. So on slide 5, which statement likely came from a high sea? Did we do that one already? I thought the last one we did was which of the following animals, and it was an ostrich. Did we skip a slide, or do I have the wrong?
No, the statement from the high sea was practice makes perfect.
Oh, I missed that. Okay,
and it was shouted out here by the audience here.
No, that's okay. I need to move forward. I'm good. I was one behind. My apologies.
Okay. Okay, and we talk about the swallow from Capistrano being the animal most like the high sea, but what's the reason for that?
It goes back to the same nesting place each year.
Exactly. They go back to the same nesting place every single year in the same time frame. They fly back to their place, and there they are. So, yeah, very consistent, very methodical. Not many changes being made there. All right. Well, that's a little quick quiz. So, let's talk here about the discussion about style combinations, because this really is critically important to your guys being successful using DISC. Now, most people are a combination of more than one style. How do you know what those points are? If you look at your graph, look at your graph 3, that middle area is shaded in blue. That's the midpoint area. So points that are above that midpoint in graph 3 are the ones that are used to identify which are primary, secondary, and tertiary, in some cases, style might be. So the highest point on your graph is your primary style. The second point on that graph, above that midpoint, is a secondary style. If there is a third point above midpoint, and it happens occasionally, that's the tertiary style. Okay, so if you only understand D, I, S, and C, this can cause a huge problem for you in terms of how you communicate with someone based on their style. Okay, I'm going to give you a personal example here. I have a friend who actually also studies DISC and has for years. She called me one day. And she said, I got this great idea. I want to run past you guys. Past you and see what you think of this, Dave. Now, we told you guys last session, my primary style is a D. My secondary style is a C. And we'll talk about that particular style more actually in session 5. But in my particular case, how that manifests itself, I tend to make quick decisions. I run with things quickly. I'm ready to go. But if I'm in unfamiliar territory, my C takes over, and I want more facts before I really make a decision. So in this case here, she had an idea that I'd never heard of before, and it was interesting. And I asked all these questions. And she'd known me for a while, but for some reason she used this call to identify me as being a high C. So we talked for about an hour. She said, I can see you're thinking about this idea, Dave. I think it really is good. Why don't you ponder it? I'll call you back same time on Thursday. We'll talk then and see how we want to move forward. I said, okay, that makes sense. Hung up the phone. my C was in charge saying, what do you have to know here? What are the details? How's this going to work? As I thought through that, I came to my conclusions, and my C, being secondary, took a back seat to my D. She calls back 2 days later, and she starts very slowly and methodically walking through all the points that she had made 2 days earlier. Why? Because she was talking to my high C. Meanwhile, I'm sitting here getting frustrated and annoyed because I'm way past this now. I'm light years down the road. I thought I had to stop her and say, whoa, whoa, Sue, you're giving me all this detail. You're talking to my C, but my primary is a D. I'm past this now. We need to move forward and make some decisions here. And she was shocked because she'd only looked at me as one style only, a C. And so she came out, called back 2 days later. She communicated to me in all the wrong ways. And if I hadn't known her, if it hadn't been a situation where she'd been making a sale to me, I'd have said, no, I don't want to talk to you. You're making me crazy. I've been done. So you need to think about both the primary and the secondary styles. Okay? Now, sometimes, as we talk through the styles process here, you'll see very clearly where two things combine together to make a complete person, if you will. But sometimes you're going to discover here that the two things or three things combine create something very unique. So until you get really experienced with using DISC, so I start off using the profile itself rather than your own observations, because you may end up missing some of the key points about their styles. Now, Inscape has identified 15 different patterns, okay? And these are the ones that are statistically unique behaviors for different types of people. And there are one or more patterns that are primary for each of the four primary styles. All right? So there are a number of D patterns. There is the creative pattern, which is a primary D or a primary D with a secondary C. Now, in some cases, they'll be exactly equal to each other. You may even find the C slightly above the D in some cases. The style is still called the creative. The inspirational pattern also has a primary D, but there's a secondary I. And you'll notice that there's also a results-oriented pattern that's also a high D secondary I. So you may identify a person and say, I can tell there's a D, I can tell there's an I, but are they inspirational or results-oriented? We'll cover that here in a few minutes. There are some I patterns. The appraiser pattern is an I with a secondary C. What makes that pattern unusual right off the top of your head? Anybody know?
They're kind of opposites of each other.
Yeah, they really are. That high I, outgoing, people-oriented. That high C, thoughtful, reserved, and task-oriented. They are directly opposite of each other. And sometimes these people will tell you they feel schizophrenic until you tell them, this is normal. And they go, oh, and they'll feel so much better about it.
But doesn't that piece about compliance, I'm sorry, this is Robin. Doesn't that piece about compliance and being compliant, isn't that what really kind of crosses those two, even though they may outwardly, in a way that they prefer to process information, data, relationships, et cetera, appear to be opposite. When you get to that relationship part, the fact that they're typically compliant, in my mind, keeps it from being total opposites.
We'll cover that in more detail in just a few minutes. But
Thank you.
But, you know, if you look at the DISC scale, they really are on different sides of the equation.
I may be just thinking of something. I'll wait.
Yeah, it can sort of make them actually pretty unique and pretty balanced, but sometimes they don't feel that way. And actually, yeah, give them a DISC assessment, and show them this is normal, does make them sometimes feel much better about themselves.
Also, the eye pattern.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that's okay. I mean, we're going to talk about this opposite track in a little bit, right? That's what you're saying.
Yeah, we're going to cover some of these here tonight. We're going to cover some of them in our next session. Let's see, where's the appraiser?
Okay. No. I don't want to take us off track. I don't want us to lose time. So
yeah, we'll cover the
thank
appraiser
you.
Here tonight.
Okay,
so the counselor pattern is a high I with a secondary S. So that's all on the right-hand side, if you will. Of the DISC model.
They're all people-oriented.
Yeah. The persuader being the high I with a secondary D.
The lawyer.
But you have the DI, inspirational, DI results, and the ID persuader. So you see this gets a little bit confusing. There are some S patterns. There's an S with a secondary D. Now notice, there's no D with a secondary S, but there is an S with a secondary D.
Is that next week?
Sorry. The agent pattern is an S with a secondary I. The investigator has three above midpoints, an S, a D, and a C. And
which
the
one
C
is that
patterns,
now?
Sorry, go ahead. Question?
I didn't hear that last one.
The investigator is an S with a D and a C. This should show, by the way, on your handouts.
Yeah, no, I'm looking.
Okay. Then the C pattern is the C with a secondary S. And then my very favorite pattern, which is the C and I and S combined. So let's walk through some of these and how they tie together to create unique people. And I asked you to have your profile nearby for tonight. You want to look back in the back portion of that, starting on page 15, where they start outlining the classical profiles. Let's turn, they're alphabetical order, so turn to page 18 in your profile. You'll see the investigator pattern. Okay? Now that's one that's got an S, a D, and a C, all above midpoint. Okay? So look at the emotion here. They're dispassionate, demonstrate self-discipline. Well, all right, well, that kind of fits the S and the C pretty much, doesn't it? And the D might not necessarily show their emotion sometimes, so you kind of see how that might tie together effectively. Judges others by use of factual information. Well, that's pretty clear from a C, but notice that the S here is so much higher than the C is. Value to the organization. Offers comprehensive follow-through. An S? Really? Works determinedly on tasks individually or in small groups. Well, the S likes working in groups. C likes working pretty much alone, tell you the truth. But D can go either way with it. Well, when they're all three of those things combined, it's the way they're going to behave. And here you have a person who's a natural high S first, and they overuse bluntness and suspicion of others.
Which profile is this?
This is the investigator.
Investigator, okay.
It's on page 18. Okay. Would increase effectiveness with more flexibility. Acceptance of others. That's a problem for a high S? Wow. Personal involvement with others. So you may see someone and say, I can tell they're a high S, but they have these other things they're doing because of the way these things tie together with different points above the midline. Look at the right-hand side, that first paragraph about the investigator. Objective and analytical. Investigators are dispassionate, anchors of reality. Generally undemonstrative, they calmly and steadily pursue an independent path toward a fixed goal. Huh. S's and C's usually follow the crowd. But here they're following, they're taking their own path to get there. Investigators are successful at many things, not because of versatility, but because of their dogged determination to follow through. Yeah, S's are not known for their dogged determination, by the way. They seek a clear purpose or goal, which they can develop an orderly plan and organize their actions. Once a project has begun, investigators fight tenaciously to achieve their objectives. Yeah, you don't think of S's as being very tenacious normally. Intervention is sometimes necessary to change their direction. As a result, they can be perceived as stubborn or opinionated. Yet their highest point is a high S, and you don't have to sit there and say, yeah, they're stubborn and opinionated. A high S, really? But the combination plays together to make this uniqueness. Second paragraph, investigators do well with challenging technical assignments, which they can use actual data to interpret the information and draw conclusions. You can see the C and the D playing in there, this behavioral style. They respond to logic rather than emotion, okay. When selling or marketing an idea, they're most successful with a concrete product. So they can sell you the new mop, they can't sell you the idea. So do you guys get a feel now after just a few minutes here was why the patterns are important?
Yeah.
So often we get workshops, and we'll talk about that after here a little, for a few minutes, but people focus on...
I can do everything but influence.
Yeah. They have... they pick up focus on their primary styles and say, well, all S's are alike. Well, they're not all alike. They have certain key things in common, but if they have these other styles above midpoint, they'd be very, very different than other high S's. Okay? So that's a high S, the secondary D, and tertiary C. Those two are going to be combined together. Fascinating, isn't it, how that plays together?
Yes, it is.
Now, take a look back on page 16 at the appraiser pattern. Now that's a high I with a secondary C. Okay, the emotion, driven to look good. All right, I get that from an I. They always want to look good. All right. The goal, victory, that's competitive, with flair. The flair I definitely get from the high I. Victory is in quotes are because a high I call victory a lot of times when they don't really win. They always think they win. Judges others by ability to initiate activities. Huh. The high I and activities don't go together very well. That's the C playing into it. Now, look at the overuses. So the high I overuses authority. Really? The high I, they're persuasive. They don't have to throw their weight around. But that high combined with this high I combined with a high C there, makes looks like a little bit like a D in that behavioral style. Would increase effectiveness with more individual follow-through. Empathy when showing disapproval and a steadier pace. So the I and the C there combine to make a different behavioral style than either the I or the C might normally look like. If you say, I know you're a high I, therefore you are, and ignore their high C secondary style, you're going to be way off base dealing with this person. Look at the second paragraph on the right-hand side there under appraiser. Appraisers help others visualize the steps necessary to accomplish results. Well, that makes sense for a high I, right? Because they're good at communication. They have the vision. Appraisers usually speak from a detailed plan of action. Yeah, high I detailed plan of action is do this. It's a high I version of detail. But that C plays in there to give them that detail orientation. Appraisers can become impatient when their standards are not maintained or when extensive follow-through is required. So do you see the C portion there coming through because they want that standard, that high, they want to be correct, they want to make sure everything's done the right way. But Cs are notoriously patient. But the place of the I's here to make them more outspoken that way. And again, you might mistake that initially for a D, possibly. Let's pause for a moment here and ask questions in general about either these two patterns or what you're seeing so far about how patterns can change the DISC behavioral style.
There's a lot of balancing going on. There's a lot of influencing each other or complimenting each other or correcting.
Yeah. They can serve to balance each other, or they can serve to create a third, a look at a third style. Like I say, this I and the C comes out looking like a D sometimes in certain parts of it. But you'll say, well, I very clearly see the I. So maybe they're an ID. Well, they're not. They're an IC. So you get more detail orientation from it.
Well, are we going to talk about the inspirational pattern?
I'm sorry?
Are we going to talk about the inspirational pattern?
You want to discuss inspirational? We're going to do that here in a few minutes, yes.
Okay, good.
Is that one yours, Tammy?
Yes, and it's not very.
Yeah, that's oh man.
On the paper.
Wow. Yeah. Tough one.
Oh my.
Someone else had a question here?
Yes, this is Gary. On my particular one, I have promoter, but my question is, I'm highest I, but. The other three are below midpoint. So how is that then in one of the classical profiles? If you have the other three styles below midpoint.
Yes, you're the closest thing we have there to a pure style. Okay. Because you're a pure high I at that point. Okay. And you'll find the objective thinker pattern on page 19 is the high C pattern. You'll find the developer pattern on page 17 is the high D pattern. And what happened to my high S? Where'd it go?
The agent on page 15?
Agent an A S with a secondary I. Where's my other? That's not it. Hang on. Oh, there it is. Promoter. Let's see. High I. Sorry. High I. Promoter. Specialist pattern is a high S. It's the last one on page 22. So it's a pattern, but those are the ones that are most pure. So, Gary, you're a pure pattern. Congratulations.
Maybe that makes it easier. I don't know.
It makes it easier to deal with people who are a pure pattern. Other things still going to play into it at certain times, but not as dramatically as the kind that are combined the way we've seen the other ones combine here.
So, Dave, this is Deb Gilchrist.
Yeah.
How much do you think... how we answer the questions, we answer them how we see ourselves, but also some of them are how we think others see us, even though we try to do it from our perspective. How much of the answers or the styles do you think are more influenced by the people around us, by our situation, our social and work situations?
Well, that's going to happen to you there is that, you'll pull out different tools, if you will, from your toolbox as you need them at work or at home.
Mm-hmm.
If you are, for example, I'm a high D and a high C, so the I and the S are not readily available to me. For me to pull those things out is a whole lot more work. Okay?
It doesn't mean you're incapable.
Right. But it doesn't mean it's painful.
It means you get exhausted trying it, because that's the introverted side of me.
Well, exactly. So think about going to a networking event. You've got a small business. You're a coach. You go to a networking event. You're a high C. That will make you miserable. And
that's
the
why
way
you don't like sales, huh, Dave?
I'm sorry?
That's why you don't really like doing sales.
That's true there, too. Yeah, absolutely. but at a high
standard,
in terms of what am I going to accomplish here to feel good about going to the event. So when I'm talking to a high C coach, for example, about building their business, and they say, oh, I don't want to go to networking events. I know you don't. So what are we going to do to make this work for you? And we find things that their high C can adapt to get them through the event. Like, don't try and meet 27 people. I want you to find 3 people that you can meet.
Right.
And I want you to find out these 5 things about those 3 people. So the C that is creating a checklist, I need to find 3 with these 5 things, okay. They turn it into a task. We get the right 5 things on our list. The 5 things that will help that person be successful in their business. They can go to the event. When they get past 3, they can go, okay. I passed 3.
Now then they go home and sleep for 3 days.
It's exactly true. They go home and sleep for 3 days. They go, that was exhausting to me.
Yeah.
We got to go with the tools we give them, but it's still not easy for them. Does that help you?
Yeah, I think so. Because you learn to adapt, but you still have that base thing that's inside of you, even though you've learned to adapt and adjust to do the other things you need to. To survive.
You can adjust and adapt, but it's going to be exhausting for you.
Yes.
And someone else is going to say, well, that's really easy. Great. You know, so many times a day when people talk about, 10 years ago, it was very popular to sit there and say, in a business environment, so, Susie, you're really good at A and B and not good at C. Let's have you do more of that to make you more well-rounded. Yeah, that's a lousy way to work with a human being. Then what you want to do is sit there and say, Susie, you're really good at A and B. You have to do more of those kind of things, because if you do those things, they come out so good. So if Susie has to do something that's not in her wheelhouse, okay, how do I give her the tools to make her do that effectively without wearing her out in the process? Okay?
Okay.
Let's go on. I'll look at another pattern. Well, let's look at the persuader pattern on page 20. Now, this is a high I with a secondary D. Okay? You can see the high I is pretty much above the high D in this case. So, emotions, trusts others, is enthusiastic. Well, enthusiasm comes from the high I, and so does trust others, because Ds don't trust anybody. Okay? That D's above midpoint, but still that high I is dominating that portion. Influence others by friendly, open manner, and verbal adeptness. Well, again, so that's the high I, right? Coming through pretty clear there. Overuses enthusiasm? Yes. Telling ability? Yes. Optimism? Yes. All things driven by their high I. But under pressure becomes indecisive. Huh. Neither I's nor D's are indecisive. Easily persuaded. Really? Becomes organized to look good. You know, D's and I's are not organized patterns, either one of them. But they combine here to create something a little different, and they'll become organized to look good. But increase effectiveness with more challenging assignments, attention to task-directed service and key details, okay, objective data analysis. So they want more D and C to make them more effective. Look at the right-hand side, that second paragraph. The most favorable environment for a persuader who's working with people, receiving challenging assignments, experiencing a variety of work activities that require mobility, because they don't want to be sitting still. They seek work assignments that will give them the opportunity to look good. All right. As a result of their natural positive outlook, persuaders may be too optimistic about a project's results or others' potential. That's a challenge of the high I. They don't see the downside with people or projects. Persuaders also tend to overestimate their ability to change behavior of others. Yes. They believe their power to convince you is stronger than it really is. They have the gift of gab from the high I. They can't always make it work. While persuaders desire freedom from routine and regimentation, they do need to receive analytical data on a systematic basis. Huh. That's not from the high I. That's the high D playing in there. Once alerted to the importance of the little things, persuaders can use information to balance their enthusiasm with a realistic assessment of the situation. So this pattern is much more closely aligned with a true I and D playing together than some of the other patterns were. The high I is dominant here very clearly. The D comes into play a few places, but it's much more clear and pure than the other styles were.
So can I ask you a question about just these patterns all together? Say we didn't look at, well, we have to look at whether you're a DI, SSP, but with the patterns. At some point in time during this, will you tell us which patterns, which is that combination of them working together, are the best coaches? Or can any of these patterns really turn out to be best coaches? And granted that maybe they're better coaching something that's similar to them.
Yeah, so that's a good point. So, again, there's no necessarily right or wrong with these patterns, and no good or bad, although I tell you that the creative pattern is probably the best, but that's just a personal opinion.
Creative, okay.
That's yours.
But different coaches, let me say differently, when you guys were learning how to coach, you talked about sample sessions and talked about it's about trying someone else on, just like dating is trying someone else on, okay? And you're going to find that, you know, Bob is a great coaching candidate, but not for you. Because what Bob needs, what you can offer, aren't the same things. It's like someone else might date Bob and say, oh, couldn't stand Bob, didn't like being around Bob. Oh, it was a horrible date. Someone else says, oh, I met this guy, Bob, he's wonderful. So a match between your styles and the styles of your client is going to make that easier for you to adapt. The more experience you get, the more aware you are of your natural styles yourself, the more you can adapt and change. But still, there'll be cases where certain patterns are not going to fit well with you. You can acknowledge that and say, good client for coaching, not a good client for me. Send them someplace else. Does that help?
Yes, that's great. That's exactly what I was thinking about.
Good. So we're looking here at this persuader with a high I secondary D. Now let's go back to the inspirational pattern. This is on page 18, which is a high D secondary I. Not so much higher the D here is than they were in the persuader pattern.
Dave?
Yes.
Hi, it's Dita. I'm actually an inspirational pattern, but I've got a high I and my secondary is D.
Yeah. So they'll come together. We'll show you how to play together actually in session 6, because there'll be times
they
can be a little reversed, but it's a dominance that really plays into effect there. Okay.
Okay.
Their relationship to each other, how close they are.
Yes. And I'll show you how that's all calculated. It's very confusing, but very good to know. It'll tell people you're really an expert at this when you can tell it, when you can explain these things. All right, inspirational pattern. Sounds delightful. Let's look at the inspirational pattern.
It doesn't
accept
read well,
aggression.
Dave.
Pardon me?
It doesn't read well.
Well, let's walk through it. Accepts aggression, downplays need for affection. All right, so the D and the I here are pretty close together. How many Ds, you know, are going to accept aggression? You know, you look at a D the wrong way, they can only get kind of annoyed, tell you the truth. Downplays need for affection. Well, that's kind of a D, but that high is really high, and the I's need affection. But combined, downplays need for affection. Do they need affection? Absolutely. I'm not going to tell you that. Inputs others by charm. Yeah, because all of D's I know are charming. Direction, yeah. Intimidation, use of rewards. Talk about contradiction.
How can you relate to the use of rewards, but I don't get the other...
You don't get the charm part?
Oh, the charm part I get, of course. But intimidation I don't get so much.
Yeah, talk to your kids about that.
Oh.
Yeah. So, but the point here is that it is opposites. They'll try charm. They'll try rewards. That doesn't work. They're not above a little threat.
Yep, that's true.
I'm taking your car and your phone.
I'll take your car, your phone, and your allowance, and you're grounded for the rest of your natural life. Or 27, whichever comes first. Okay, here, look at overuses. Attitude that the ends justify the means. Well, you know what? That's kind of the D and the I playing together.
Mm-hmm.
Because the I's and D's both want to get action. They both want to get things done, if you will. How? Not a big concern to them. Under pressure, becomes manipulative, quarrelsome, or even belligerent. The high I is belligerent and quarrelsome? Yeah, sometimes they are. Combine them with that D, You got one feisty individual there, don't you? Look at the first paragraph on the right-hand side. Person with inspirational pattern consciously attempt to modify the thoughts and actions of others. Well, there's your high eye coming through pretty loud and clear. They want to control the environment.
Right, you have it.
They're astute at identifying and manipulating an individual's existing motives in order to direct that person's behavior toward a predetermined end. In other words, I know what you want. I know what I want. I'm going to make you get where I want to be. And this pattern is called inspirational. I'm not sure if I like the title there or not, to tell you the truth. Third paragraph. Inspirational persons can be charming in their interactions. They're persuasive when obtaining assistance for repetitive and time-consuming details. In other words, I don't want to do this, so you do it for me. Here's why you should do it for me. Okay? People often experience a conflicting sensation by feeling drawn to inspirational people, yet being curiously distanced. Others may feel used by inspirational persons' manipulation powers. While they sometimes inspire fear in others and override their decisions, inspirational persons are generally well-liked by coworkers because they use their considerable verbal skills to persuade others whenever possible. Inspirational persons can clearly prefer to accomplish goals through cooperation and persuasion, not domination. But they're not above it.
You better hope this person has a high EQ.
Oh, there are some magic words for you. Now, let's talk about EQ right now as we apply to any of these, either four basic DISC behavioral pattern styles or any of these patterns. If a person through DISC or just through life experiences realizes they have these tendencies and say, I need to be careful of this, and they raise their EQ, they can get past a lot of these downsides. But they're still there, and they still may pop out if they need to pull them out and use them. So the EQ process, it doesn't come only from an EQ assessment. It's about people growing up and looking themselves in the mirror and saying, what am I good and bad at? What can I do to be better? If they have a high EQ, if they are socially aware, and they know they have tendencies to do these things, they can fight them. Now, at the same time, people may become aware of their natural style and their abilities and use those things as a weapon.
Wait, let me ask you a question. What did you say this is a whose pattern?
Sorry, let me say that again, please.
Somebody said this is a whose pattern. I just didn't hear what they said.
Oh, I said this is an Oprah Winfrey pattern.
Oprah, that's what I thought you said. Yeah, that's interesting. What do you think about that, Coach David?
About it being Oprah Winfrey pattern?
Yeah, whether or not this is something that, whether or not Oprah Winfrey fits this pattern to some degree, or to
probably,
a great degree.
She probably does. You see a lot of I and a lot of D both in Oprah.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, she'll pull it out. She'll be naturally charming.
Uh-huh.
But she's not above using that hammer if she needs to. Now, who's the other guy? Who's the bald guy that talks with
Dr. Phil?
Dr. Phil. Now,
yeah.
He's a lot more folksy.
He's still doing the same thing.
Oprah is. But he's very blunt and very direct.
Right.
There's a lot of D in him, but he knows his tendencies, and so he thinks before he speaks, and he's still direct without being a hammer.
Okay.
I want to call him the velvet hammer.
Okay. thank you for elaborating on that. I apologize for taking up time. I just, that was interesting to me because when I think about these patterns, I try to think of someone who I either am very familiar with or people are familiar with and examples that I can use as I describe. So thank you.
Good. But you can see here how this works in terms of the patterns playing together. And I need to understand not just I see two things together, I see a Dean and I, but where they really play together.
Yeah, because I'm also an ENFJ, which is also an Oprah pattern. So I'm starting to see, I'm concerned.
But you want to be Oprah?
Yeah, both of my profiles, only 2% of the population is an ENFJ. So I'm a DI, inspirational, and I'm an ENFJ, and both of those were Oprah's listed as.
Well, there you go. You and Oprah, best buds.
Well, if I had a
one meeting she doesn't agree with.
Right.
In case you made something. Yeah.
Still trying to figure out if it's good or bad.
Let's look at one more DI pattern here. Go to results oriented, which is also a primary D with a secondary I. It's on page 21. In this case, note that the I is not nearly as high as the D is, but still above midpoint. Emotions. Verbalizes ego strength, displays rugged individualism. Well, there's your high D playing through pretty clearly, right? Goal of dominance and independence. Look at overuses. Impatience, win, loss, competition. Yeah, that's the D playing out heavily there. Ds can be very impatient, and they always look in terms of win-lose. They'll compete on anything. Under pressure, even though they're a secondary I, they become critical and fault-finding. Resist. Participating with a team may overstep the boundaries. Well, there's your D playing through there again, even though their I is clearly above midpoint. Look at the
fear.
That's
because their D is so much higher than their I.
Their I is still pretty up there. It's still above midpoint. So the I, so you're going to see that I in there, but you're going to see the D controlling it much more than the D controlled the other ones. They fear others taking advantage of them. They fear slowness, especially in task activities. Being a pushover. So they'll play hardball even though they don't have to. On the right-hand side, that top paragraph, results-oriented people display self-confidence. Well, you think they get that from a D and an I, right? Both? Which may, some people may interpret as arrogance, which also comes from both the D and the I. They actively seek opportunities that test and develop their abilities to accomplish results. That's very heavily the D showing through there. Results-oriented people like difficult tasks, competitive situations, unique assignments, and important positions. So the first three things are very highly played to the D. The last couple kind of play more toward the I, because the I really wants to be important. Well, both D and I both want to be important, but the first three really kind of are D primarily. Last two can be D or I. Look at the last paragraph. Result-oriented people are quick thinkers, because both the D and the I are. And they are impatient and fault-finding with those who are not. Oops, there's some judgment coming into play there, isn't there? They evaluate others on their ability to get results. Results-oriented people are determined and persistent, even in the face of antagonism. Yeah, that's not the I. That's clearly the D there coming out and, if you will, baring their fangs a little bit. They take command of the situation when necessary, whether or not they are in charge. In an uncompromising drive for results, they may appear blunt and uncaring. But again, a D and I, both above midpoint. So, you all see why accommodations are really important, don't you?
Yes.
This is what separates good DISC practitioners from bad DISC practitioners, the ability to understand these and deal with them and go beyond the D, I, S, and C. The challenge is when people start to learn DISC, even if you talk about a client, you always start with D, I, S, and C because that's the basis. But you got to be able to get them past that, get to the real meat and potatoes of who they are and how you can help them. I want to cover one more thing here before we step into the next section at the top of the hour. There are three – I'm sorry, yes, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, just a question. When somebody's the low, you talked a little bit about the creative pattern on 17, and if somebody's a C and they have to go to a networking, do you work with the C part of them to balance it out, like you said, to put them into tasks? How does that differ from – say, gee, if they're a low IRS, you're not necessarily trying to bring them up. You're trying to maximize the value of their, say, two highest
right.
on the scale.
Yeah. So what are you really good at? How can I use that to accomplish what you need to accomplish here?
Got it. Rather than saying, gee, you're a low IRS, let's fix that.
Right. We're not going to fix your IRS.
Got it.
But we can make you get you to the event by doing these things. And you can, you know, with a C, you can also arm them with key questions to ask.
Gotcha.
The same is true of the S, because they're friendly, but they're reserved. Okay? So give them some things to work with there that'll help them.
Very good. Thank you.
You're welcome. There are three irregular patterns that you need to be aware of. And the overshift to an all 4 points are at or above midpoint. Undershift, all 4 points are at or below midpoint. And tight, all four just kind of go back and forth around midpoint. All these patterns are, I'll tell you, they're irregular. You got that pattern on one of your clients, it's not a good profile to use. We use this as an interviewing tool to understand someone's behavioral style before we hire them. That's good that way. But what's bad is hire them, and then 2 weeks later give them a DISC profile, then you'll get these patterns. Because they'll be confused still in their own mind as how they fit into the environment around them. So prior to hiring them, you can get a good profile. Too soon after they've been hired, you oftentimes get this confused profile. I tell people if they're going to use DISC in their company and they don't want to use it in the hiring process, don't give someone a profile for at least 90 days after they've been there, and then give them the profile. You get a much better result that way.
Because they're kind of in shock?
They're kind of unsure. They're feeling their way around still. And it shows up really, he's clearly there with these irregular patterns. I went a couple years ago, I did with somebody who insisted I do with her new employee. I said, okay, but you know what? I'm warning you, you may just wasted $75. That's okay, I want it done. So I did it, came back with his pattern, he goes, didn't tell me anything at all. I said, yeah, you're right, it doesn't. It's not much help, is it? We did it 3 months later, got a very clear pattern. And it matched a person identically what they really were. Cost them more money because they had to do the whole profile again. So prior to a hire, works just fine. Shortly after hiring them, it's not a good time to give them a profile. You oftentimes get the skewed results.
So do you suggest this as a pre-employment screening or really more useful once they're already employed in any department?
It can work either way. It's good as a pre-employment tool because people may try and buffalo their way through the interview. But if you give them that DISC assessment and you need somebody at the front desk who's bubbly and outgoing, it'll show pretty clearly in their profile that they're a high C. And you go, oops, they interviewed well. They memorized all the questions and all the answers. So it works well as a pre-employment tool as part of the process, not the entire process. Part of the process works well post-employment, about 90 days in, just not in that first 90-day window after they've been hired. Not a good time for it.
So which one of the other, so which one of the others do you think that matches with? I mean, is it such an MBTI or an EQ or both or?
Well, MBTI is a much more scientific, psychological profile than DISC is.
Uh-huh.
People try and match them up all the time, but they really measure different things.
Well, that's what I'm asking. What do you think? Because I was actually thinking, especially when one of the young ladies on here said that she's an E in something, and that's one of the more or the less prevalent, only 2% or something along those lines. So I'm thinking if I needed to come up with two that I wanted a client to have all of their potential, say, you know, management level, supervisor level, or whatever, take, which ones would you couple together? So, for example, when I work with service management and I'm helping them with process management, I ask them to use not only ITIL, which is the IT Information Library for Infrastructure Library that helps them to talk about their processes, but I also ask them to look at, what their Six Sigma measures are for what their how they're managing the data and what they're measuring and what they're expecting to get from the data. So I'm thinking this is something that could be combined with something else as well to create a broader report and a bigger strategy document, right?
So DISC is a behavioral assessment, not a psychological assessment. That's why. So I use it for behaviors, and then I use EQ as a way to say, do they understand their behaviors, how they're managing them, and they modify those? So I combine DISC and EQ together.
DISC and EQ. Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I'm asking practical questions, but I am understanding the theory. I'm looking at what we can do with it practically, right? Because at the end of the day, the reason to take this course for me, I don't know what everybody else's is, but is to be able to add things to my repertoire or tool belt, as one would call, that will increase my success level so that I'm not guessing as much as I feel like I am doing on occasion with some of the other tools I'm using.
Yeah. The tool like this helps you understand the person better, helps them understand themselves better. Go back to the EQ model, know yourself, manage yourself, know others, manage others, just as a quick way to be able to get from one to the other.
That's where your obsession with metacognition comes into play.
Sorry, say it again, please.
Oh, metacognition. I have this addiction.
Oh. we'll hold
Why
that
do you
for
think
later.
That? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's the top of the hour, so if you want to sign off now, you're welcome to. If you want to hear a little bit about how using DISC with groups, I'd be happy to do that with you for the next 20 minutes or so. But if you want to hang up, you are welcome to do so because the class has ended for tonight. We'll do more on classical patterns in session 5 next Monday.
Thanks, Dave.
Okay. All right.
Hi, Dave. I'm staying on.
Okay. I got still a bunch of people on here still, so.
You too.
Dave, it's Ronaldo. I want to let you know I've been here since 9:07.
Okay. Thank you. I'll make sure I mark you as here.
Okay.
All right. So, first of all, while this class is aimed toward, DISC and coaching, DISC is a phenomenal tool to use in groups. you have to be careful to use it, though, as a self-discovery tool. In the class here, I'm doing a lot of lecturing, if you will, and I do DISC with in front of work groups. I try and minimize the lecture and maximize the experience. So what does that mean? I let them expose themselves to the DISC theory by talking about, if you will, that chart for a few minutes and the active versus reserved concept, and allow them, I mean, I literally get them out of their chairs and say, okay, so some folks in life tend to be more, I give a lot of synonyms for the active concept. And some folks tend to be more thoughtful, reserved, give them some more synonyms there as well. If you think you fit that active category, go to the front of the room. If you're more that thoughtful, reserved kind of person, go to the back of the room. And then I have them look around and say, so if you guys all know each other, you know, who's in the wrong group here? Who belongs in the other part of the room? And you'll see them. They'll sit there and say, oh, no, Bob belongs mm-hmm. over here, and Susie belongs over there. And mm-hmm. people will trade spots. I'll say, okay, well, that's good. Now we got happy where we are now? Oh, yeah, we're all good here now. All right. I do the same thing with the task orientation versus the people orientation. Give them some descriptors, give them some synonyms, and say, where do you fit now? I go to the right-hand side of the room versus the left-hand side of the room. And they split apart. And we talk about, all right, so now, who's in the wrong area now? And there's some trade run that goes through that as well. Not generally as much, but some there is.
Dave?
Yes?
Is this before they've taken their test?
It's before they've seen the results of their assessment.
Okay.
Okay? They've taken the profile in advance, but they haven't seen the results.
Okay.
You guys, when I gave you your assessment, I made the results available to you instantly, but I have the option to sit there and say, nope, they can't see the results. It's what I do when I have group work. All right, so once I've got them I've got the front and back separated, now they're going left and right, I start saying, okay, so if you were the active person up in the front of the room here, you're on the left-hand side now, you're task-oriented, go to the upper left-hand portion of the room. Again, active, people are on the right-hand side of the room, go to the upper-hand quadrant. And I break them into the four styles based on that. And I ask to see if they're comfortable with where they are or not, with those descriptors. Once in a while someone's not, usually they are. And I tell them, you've just done the basic DISC concept here. Let's see how you compare this to how you did your assessment. Then I give them their assessments. Tell them to look for that primary style, that number that's highest above midpoint. And then make a point to have them change groups if they're in the wrong group. And occasionally one or two people will change groups, but for the most part, they're all where they belong. Those that change, I ask them why they change. What's different? And they can explain to me and to the rest of the group why they feel it's different. Now, that's an introductory exercise I do to get people in the concept of DISC. As I said before, we have to start there before you get into the meat and potatoes and the combination styles. But a big part of what DISC is about is helping them see the value of the other styles and the other behaviors. So I want to do exercises then and things to help them see their natural tendencies and those of others as well. So you get a couple of examples here. I sit there and say, okay, so you guys are all the high D's, you're the high I's, you're the high S's, you're the high C's. That's just great. Why don't you turn around to the whiteboard behind you and list up there the things that make you special as a group. And you'll see a lot of bonding go on with the groups. And they'll sit there and say, yeah, where are the D's? You know, where? And they'll list there the things that make them special, the name of the I's, S's, and C's. And then we'll walk them through and have them talk about that out loud to the whole group. And you'll see a little bit of the D's and the I's, if you will, poking fun at the S's and the C's. Not that the S's and C's don't care about the D's and the I's, but they don't talk about it out loud. D's and I's do. They like to tell them, okay, tell you what, everybody shift one station to the right. So the D will go to the I station, I to the S, S to the C, C to the D. And I give them little stickers. But tell you what, look at those things in front of you on the board there as a group. And put stickers next to things that just really annoy the crap out of you. And everybody gets very excited to do that kind of thing. And they do it, and they mark all these things that annoy them, and I say, okay, great, everybody shift again. Same practice, same routine. Shift them again. Funny, and they're all having a good time marking out things they like about other people, behavioral styles. Get them back to their home base, and they're all shocked by things they considered strengths and things made them special that others don't like. That's how you can do to help use this as a tool to help them see how others view their style versus how they view their style. So I'd like to do, I've got some video, I've got some PowerPoints that I use, I've got all kinds of presentations, but the real key learning comes to the exercises that you do to help them see what their natural strengths are, weaknesses, and how others view them. One thing I like to do, got them in the four corners. Sorry?
Yes. Oh, quick question before you move on to what you do next is, are some of these exercises, are there one or two exercises that are included in the documentation going forward, or?
I'm sorry, I missed the last part of what you said there.
Are there any of the exercises you're talking about now? If this exercise you described sounds really great. Are there any others that are included in the documentation that you'll have for us going forward, or no?
Well, no, the stuff I have going forward is kind of the profile stuff. It's not really about teaching a workshop as such, because this is just not a long enough session to do all the workshop stuff we do.
Understood.
We do a lot of the stuff, things with workshops.
Yep, no,
we have
understood.
Videos and PowerPoints, all kinds of stuff I use.
Sure, understood. Thank you.
Just give you an idea of what's available, though, and the key being to make it interactive, make it a non-lecture. You have to talk some, obviously, but make it a non-lecture.
Thank you.
You're welcome. One thing I like to ask, just when we get them in the four corners, I like to ask them this question. I say, you've all heard the old joke, why did the chicken cross the road? Answer that question from your behavioral style perspective. So the D's get together and decide why the chicken crossed the road, because the chicken's a high D. And why chicken crossed the road, because the chicken's a high I, or a high S, or a high C. And you see how the different groups begin to think about this very same question. And again, helps build that idea that we have different thought processes, and they're not right or wrong, they're just different. I did this with a group a couple of years ago, and I asked this question, and I got to the D's, and D's, of course, said, well, we cross the road because they're one or two, and, you know, it's a challenge we have to meet, and we just cross the road, you know. I went to the I's, and as a group, they obviously practiced this, they did the chicken dance. And it would just fit their behavioral style perfectly. But it showed how they looked at the problem versus how the D's looked at it, which was, this is a challenge. To the I's, it was, This is fun. The S is, of course, crossroad because the D's told them to. And they're just following instructions. And the C's just carefully navigate across the road to make sure they don't get by any cars as they're crossing. But again, you get to see then how behaviors are different. And you can begin to show the value of each type of behavior and why it's good. Why it's good to be cautious and make sure you don't get hit by a car crossing the road. Why it should be fun to cross the road and why you should have friends over there. So these are things that we kind of do. I'll tell you that with a very the ideal group size for a group is a minimum of 12, max around 22, 23, something like that in that area. Much more than low 20s, it gets a little bit unwieldy. Less than a dozen, you likely won't have D's, I's, S's, and C's, or you may have one in a category, which makes it feel very personal and not very safe.
Too personal, you're not safe in a fight. You won't have a large enough breakdown of individuals in each of the different four categories.
If you're on, well, if you're on board, you won't know that. You won't have enough there to do it.
Yeah. So when I think about the period, I think about the essence of lemmings. Is that, in that exercise about the chicken crossing the road, is that offensive?
Yeah, it's something that I do pretty routinely, and you almost always get the answer they cross the road because someone told them to.
So that's a lemming thing, right? Or is it not?
It is a lemming thing. Yeah, they didn't do it on their own because S's are not prone to action on their own.
Right. Okay. That's a good
one for me. But they need to be motivated to get something done first, then they'll do it. So, yeah, they told me to cross the road, so I did. These are my bosses, so I did. Yeah. So with a group of 12 to 20, to be effective at all, it's just the basic DIS and C, you need 3.5 to 4 hours. And that's just the basic DIS and C. So that should be a setup for the next step, or next workshop, which is the combination patterns. Those you start to break down into how the S's are the same, but they're not all the same because they have different secondary styles and different thought processes. So you can use DISC in a group. I mean, I always start with basic DISC communication. It's the easiest place to start. But DISC is also good for things like building teamwork. So the value of each of the four styles and how they play into a team, I have workshops built around the idea of how they play together as a team. How they manage conflict, handle conflict. Again, I think it's built around the idea of that are conflict-based in the workshop. They get their basic stuff out of the way first, the DIS and C, the pattern that they're in, and talk about how the patterns handle conflict. Motivation is another one. What motivates them? Because, again, they're all going to be different this way. So you can probably do 6 or 7 workshops with a group on various levels of DISC, getting down deeper and deeper, and help them get a better understanding of what DISC is really all about. So here's one of the real keys, though, to make a DISC effective with a group. And that's at the end. When you're just about done, rather than saying, hey, it's been great being with you guys, thanks a bunch, see you later. No, you don't do that. What you really want to do is say, based on what you've learned here, what are you going to do differently? And I ask that question based on whatever the workshop is. But in basic communication, I would say something like, right, so you all know someone you have a problem communicating with because you just seem to have mismatched style. Identify that person by name on your worksheet. Identify what you think their DISC style is. and then identify your action plan that you're going to do to communicate better with this person now that you know what their style is and your style. And then I come back about 2 weeks later and follow up on that very question. Would you get how to work? Would you do? What changed? And invariably you get great results. People sit and say, oh, I did this, and I got such different results from it. And now they want to do the pattern, the profile as well, and their group over there. So at least it won't work that way. But action plans, as opposed to wasn't this fascinating, let's all go back to work, is the key to saying, I can embed this in the organization, it'll work, and you can use it, as opposed to it's done, it's over. So that's some really quick stuff about DISC at a group. I'm sure you guys have a million questions. I can't answer all of them, obviously, but what are some big questions you have right now about DISC with a group?
Well, I have to think on this a whole lot.
Yes. Hi, Dave. It's Fran. Hello, Dave.
Yes.
Okay, this is Fran. Yeah, I'm wondering, how do we get into a corporation to do this? I mean, because now that I'm learning the DISC, and it's really, really good, I would like to do executive coaching. How do you, you know, bring this to, don't you have to really know it very, very well before you can actually go in and start using it?
Yeah, I mean, it takes some practice, and I really encourage you guys to practice with friends, neighbors, TV shows. Identify people's styles based on what you see and justify the behavior based on what you see in their style. So, but you have to do it, you have to do it pretty well. You're right. But the way to get into organizations with it, the simple way, for what I'm concerned, is to give that decision maker a free DISC profile. Here, take one for yourself. See what you think of it. They take the profile. They read the results. And you sit there and say, suppose you had this information about all your employees. How would it change the way you lead them, the way you manage them? And, you know, it's impactful that way. It's a, you know, it's a 37-50, if you will, investment for a profile that leads to a $5,000 workshop. So it's a pretty good return on the investment for $37.50.
Uh-huh.
Or less. But I do encourage it. I mean, one of the things we'll talk about in session six more is you guys have all done the computerized version of DISC. I do the paper version oftentimes where I can like create the profile. They take the profile as they're sitting there over lunch with me. I'll rate it while we're having lunch and walk them through the results. And that demonstrates a deep DISC knowledge on my part. And since the results are so accurate, they see the impact and value of it right away.
And is it difficult to correct it or to analyze it or do it at lunch? You know, how do you take the paper version and do the results?
It does take practice. When I first got my first paper version, the first thing I did was it's a scratch off is what it is. You scratch off. We'll cover that in session six, but I went through and scratched off every answer to see what they all said.
Oh, really?
That's my high C coming out. Everything, all the detail. I can do it very quickly because I've been doing them for a while, but I encourage people who are going to do that kind of thing to, you know, take a couple of profiles, give them to friends and family, practice the idea of scoring them so that you can do it easily. If you're sitting there at lunch with somebody who's an executive at some company and you struggle with how to do this in front of them, you don't look good. So like everything
else,
practice in advance so you know how to do it. And you sit down and do it with them, it's a whole lot easier. And you look good to process it and say, or, you know, say, I like the paper version, give them the computerized version. But I never sit there and say, here's the access code, take the assessment, I'll call you next week. I would say, here's the access code. I'll bring you the assessment next week.
Right.
But we'll let them see it until you're ready to sit down with them and show them what it really says and how they can use it.
Exactly.
Okay?
Okay.
Do you do any kind of separate training on doing this with a group?
I mean, like for coaches like that?
Yes.
I have not in the past. Now, I've had some inquiries about it, but I have never have done that. It's a smaller audience for me, so.
Okay.
Could we watch you do it?
I haven't done it in the past.
Where do you live, Dave? We'll come over there and we'll watch you actually do a group.
Pick me up on your way. Pick me up on your way.
I live in Denver, but I travel.
Oh, you do travel?
There's a D talking.
Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking maybe there's a class opportunity for you, Dave, in that I don't know if it's a class itself or if it's a mentoring opportunity, but that's what I'm hearing you asking for. Is that correct or no? Is that what you're saying? Is maybe you'd like to do it, but you'd like, you know, to do a little test and run on your neighbors, your PTA group, whoever, and then the first time you try to do it professionally, to have Dave coach you through it because of his extensive experience. So is that what you're saying?
That's what I heard her saying, yes.
Yeah, so I'm thinking, do you do that, Dave, or Coach David? Is that something that you do?
I'm not opposed to doing that. I haven't done it in the past. I will tell you, when I first learned the disc myself, I put together my own presentations, and I think I'm a pretty smart guy. I think they sucked. So now I've done some other things that got some professional work done on them, and I do have some packages that I can sell to people. And the packets that I do sell are self-contained. I mean, they contain PowerPoints, they contain scripts, they contain video, so you can give the presentation on your own. But I've never asked them out and watch somebody and we'll grade them. I'm not opposed to doing that, I guess, but it'd be expensive because it's a long trip for me and I got to sit there through the whole presentation. But I want people to be successful with DISC. So I'll do what I can to make you guys successful.
So what I hear you say is that, yes, you would do it. You haven't done it in the past, but you're thinking about, you know, per diem, round-trip travel expenses, but you'd be willing to work with them or grade them? Because grading isn't what I think, and I don't know if she's still there or not, but that's all I think she was asking. And she actually made me think, the first time I did this, I would want to make sure that I didn't leave them in worse shape than they were when I arrived. And so it's great to have somebody who has that experience in the background there with me.
Yeah. I guess there are possibilities so there we could share the president or something like that. Or,
add it in.
You go out and sell one. So you go out someplace and say, I'll sell one of these workshops. I'll have Dave deliver for someone. I'll just watch him the first time. I'm not really opposed to that idea either. I've never heard of it before, but I'm not opposed to it.
No, but I think that's a great way to sell it, right? I mean, initially, well, for us, because I think that we're trying to make sure that we're delivering the best product to our clients and we're adding this to something or a client that we may already have existing or a program that we're already doing. So we would find out what your cost would be and then a per diem for food and all that. And then maybe have you deliver part of the first part and then have us do certain sessions based on where we were comfortable and then kind of team build it or team coach it the first time, which would give us, I think, a stronger initial delivery and an exceptional added learning opportunity, kind of like an internship. When you take normally when you go to school for something, you do an internship that lets you apply. And you get some instruction and direction and correction, good, around that as well. So it sounds like you're not opposed to it. So I guess it's an off topic. We'll send it, emails if we're interested. Is that what you
I've never been opposed to that before, but I'd be happy to work something like that out for people because if it'll help you and help me, then it helps everybody as far as I'm concerned. So I'm good with that.
Okay. Thank you.
Are you at some point going to say more about the
self-contained packages that you were talking about? The
for
presentation?
I mean, I didn't build them. I didn't bring them to the class because they're not part of, you know, coaching with this, which is kind of one-on-one. But I built packages around communication and sales and conflict that I can literally sell for like $249, so they're cheap. And they're totally reusable. It's the same PowerPoint you use each time. It's the same script and videos you use each time. The only difference is you have to buy profiles for your participants. But I think it's a good investment. I built it for people who want to do – people call me and said, I want to do a presentation. I don't know how. And so I put these things together, and I sell them that way. They're inexpensive because they're like $249, but say they're totally reusable.
Well, I looked for resources, you know, on your website, and I couldn't find where it had resources like that.
Yeah, my website's not designed for that part. It's designed for end users, customers. A lot of stuff's not out there, but anybody wants to, that kind of stuff, I'm happy to provide it. I say I've got them. I've already built them. And I've told them to other coaches in the past who said, I want to do a presentation. Help me. I've got this available if you want it.
Thank you for doing that.
Oh, I'm happy to do it. I'm happy to do it.
Good class,
yeah,
David. Thanks.
I like the idea of successful coaches. I worked for CTA for years. I mean, I like the idea of coaches being successful. And you need tools, reality, to be successful. You need something like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's kind of a related question. Do you do individual coaching by the hour or no?
For coaches?
Yes, four coaches, sorry.
I do some of that. I mean, primary target market is executives, and I can charge them a lot more. But I do get calls from CTA students, and I do some coaching for them at a very much reduced rate because they can't afford what the executives pay me. But I only do a handful of them because it is, you know, less expensive and less revenue.
Okay. All right.
Other questions I can answer for you about this? All right. Well,
I appreciate you doing it.
I'm happy to help any way I can. It's kind of who I am. So I'll talk to you guys all again next Monday.
Okay.
Dave, are you sending us the thing again?
Thank you, Dave.
Dave?
Yes.
Dave?
Yes.
Hello?
I'm here.
Okay, are you going to be sending us the classes, the two classes, 3 and 4, you know, the verbal part of it? Or the
audio?
The audio.
The same link you have before. They just keep adding them on to the same webpage.
Oh, good, good. All right, take care.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.